From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios on the road, you're listening to Inside Agriculture, coming from Brookings, South Dakota. While a key GOP senator is outraged the Senate did not confirm Ag Secretary nominee Sonny Perdue last week before leaving for a two-week spring recess, and Chuck Grassley is blaming it on politics. Grassley's no stranger to slugfest. As Judiciary Chair, Grassley shepherded President Donald Trump's Supreme Court pick, Neil Gorsuch, through a bruising confirmation fight, filling a seat Democrats charge was stolen from Merrick Garland, former President Obama's choice, whom Grassley refused to consider. Now Grassley's bashing Democrats for failing to allow a vote last week on Trump's agriculture secretary pick, former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue.
You know, last week it would have been pretty darn easy for the Senate to approve Sonny Perdue to be ag secretary, and it could have been done through a unanimous consent agreement. However, as could be predicted, Senate Democrats once again chose to obstruct this administration's cabinet getting in place.
And if that weren't enough,
Democrats have already won the award for the slowest cabinet confirmation process since George Washington.
Records show that in 1789, the Senate confirmed Alexander Hamilton as Treasury Secretary within minutes of receiving his nomination. But after 228 years, Grassley and many in agriculture lament a process that can still be inefficient and controlled by the political whims of the minority.
The only outcome of this obstruction by the Democrats is leaving the Department of Agriculture drifting without a captain for another few weeks.
Grassley speculated that Democratic leader Chuck Schumer refused to expedite Perdue's nomination because of the GOP's filibuster-ending rules change to confirm Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. Floor speeches by Democrats and failure by top ag Democrats to convince their leaders to move Perdue suggest as much. The Senate will take a vote on Perdue, but not until it reconvenes April 24th. Now, after that, there's little telling how the fallout over Gorsuch will affect party cooperation on many sub-cabinet appointments at USDA and other departments. Well, we're going to take a break here. However, when we come back, world trade is expanding amid deep uncertainty. Well, we're going to talk about that from Brookings, South Dakota, right after we take a break for these words. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios on the road, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. We're broadcasting from Brookings, South Dakota this morning. And, yep, we're going to hit the road this morning, head up to Huron, South Dakota, and then we'll head to Aberdeen, South Dakota. I have a hunch I might be in studio tomorrow morning. That would be a good thing. Anyway, let's take a look at what's going on inside agriculture. The World Trade Organization says world trade is on track to expand 2.4% this year, although there is deep uncertainty about economic and policy developments in the United States. The WTO says clarity is needed on President Donald Trump's trade policies. The WTO pushed against trade protectionism in comments, as a spokesperson said, "We should see trade as part of the solution to economic difficulties, not part of the problem." Trump has already removed the U.S. from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement that was worth more than an estimated $4 billion to U.S. agriculture. Now, Trump also intends to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement, which could cause tensions between the U.S. and Mexico and Canada. Well, Mexico's the number one customer for U.S. corn and corn-based products. Well, also, we have to thank our listeners on 910 Classic Country, KCJB, as well as Ag News 890, Lisbon and Fargo, and Farm News and Real Country, Lisbon and Fargo. And, of course, KCJB is in Minot. Well, the price of hogs should go up in 2017, even though there's going to be more of them around. Well, Todd Gleason has comments with this report.
This year, pork producers around the nation should raise about 3% more hogs. This increase in supply will coincide with an increase in price. That's a bit unusual, but there are some reasons for it to happen, says Purdue University Extension agricultural economist Chris Hurt.
Prices are going to be supported by stronger demand because of a growing U.S. economy and by a robust 8% growth in exports, at least as estimated by USDA. New packer capacity is also expected to help give stronger bids for hog prices. Feed costs will be at the lowest level in a decade, and total production costs are expected to be at decade lows as well.
The national breeding herd has increased by 4% since 2014. Notable expansions of the breeding herd in the past 3 years have occurred in Missouri, 25%, Ohio, 9%, Illinois, 8%, and Indiana, Nebraska, and Oklahoma, each up 4%. Given this increase, it's important to note live hog prices averaged about $46 last year. It's estimated producers lost about $11 on each hog they marketed. Prices are expected to be $3 to $4 higher this year. So live hogs averaged about $50 a hundredweight in the first quarter of 2017, or this year. Prices for the second and third quarters are expected to average in the low 50s. Prices will likely be seasonally lower in the fourth quarter and average in the mid-40s. Chris Hurt says if this forecast pans out, then prices would average about $49 for the year and be slightly under projected total cost of production. Producers would still lose about a dollar for every hog sold.
Well, this is basically a forecast for a break-even year, with all costs being covered, including labor cost and an equity investors receiving a normal rate of return.
There are some financial shadows that could fall on the pork industry in 2017. Hurt's concerned about competition from the beef and poultry sectors. Both have increased production and will be vying for the consumer's food dollar. That, by the way, has had an optimistic start to the year. However, Chris Hurt is cautious about the follow-through needed to maintain the strong economic tone as the new administration works to develop stimulus packages. Feed cost. Bad weather conditions in the Northern Hemisphere are always a concern. And finally, the industry, he says, needs to keep expansion of the breeding herd to near 1%.
This 1% expansion of the breeding herd, along with about a 1% higher weaning rate, means the industry can increase pork production around 2% a year. Now, that's sufficient to cover a 1% growth in the domestic population and a 1% growth that we need in U.S. production to meet expanded exports.
Growth of the breeding herd at more than 1% could shift the industry back into deeper losses. I'm Todd Gleason.
From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios on the road, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. While farmers are seeing increased problems with herbicide-resistant weeds, now as growers head to the fields this spring, it's important to create a weed management program that addresses resistance. Michael Clements has more in this report.
Kaylee Wilkerson of Montgomery City, Missouri, who farms with her father and husband, says they have experienced problems of weed resistance firsthand on their 3,000-acre corn and soybean farm.
We farm mostly corn and soybeans, and we do mostly a rotation as Mother Nature allows, and we put cover crops on every acre last year, and we are seeing a lot of resistant water hemp and resistant mare's tail, not only on our farm, but the neighboring fields.
Wilkerson explains their weed management program.
Our motto here is the hardest weed to kill is the one you let come out of the ground. So we work really hard to put on FMC's Authority MTZ at planting on our soybean ground and overlapping residuals throughout the season. We kind of think if you can keep your fields clean and they start clean, then you'll have better luck keeping them clean throughout the season. We usually follow with Anthem Max to prevent any escapes, and we've had really good luck with this program. We've raised actually the best beans we've ever had last year.
She says non-herbicide options, including the use of cover crops, also help control herbicide-resistant weeds such as Palmer amaranth and water hemp.
We have had really good luck with cover crops in the fall, usually when the combine's rolling out of the field, we're rolling in the field. It just takes manpower to get everything accomplished with the cover crops. But they help suppress the weeds throughout the winter. And then we usually go in the spring and burn down. And then we plant no-till after that. And it's really helped. You kind of get a little bit of a mat on the ground if you get a very thick cover crop, and that suppresses the weeds. And it kind of helps hold moisture throughout the season if it is dry.
She says using an effective program to manage resistant weeds can help prevent resistance in the future.
I would say resistant weeds are definitely a problem. And I think if we can all do what's best for our own operations and the land and using a program like overlapping residuals, it will be better off in the long run for all of us. And we'll be able to prevent any more resistance in the future as long as we're using everything as it's labeled. All of this didn't happen overnight, so we kind of need to be stewards of the products that we're using and our land.
Learn more about effective ways to manage PPO-resistant weeds and FMC's Anthem Max and Authority brand herbicides online at fmcagus.com/weed resistance. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides and Anthem Max herbicide are not registered for use or sale in California. FMC, Authority, and Anthem are trademarks of FMC Corporation or an affiliate. Michael Clements reporting.
From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios on the road, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. Well, farmers are facing tough decision when it comes to weed control this year. Michael Clements has more in this report.
Left uncontrolled, weeds could cost corn growers more than half of their yield. Syngenta Herbicide Technical Product Lead Gordon Vail says farmers are facing a couple challenges when battling tough weeds.
It's more difficult to find a herbicide that actually kills them, so weed resistance is really critical. I think that's number one. Number two, I think the issue that growers are facing right now is economics, right? So they're trying to control these very difficult weeds, but they're trying to do it, you know, as economically as they can and still get the control. So they're kind of in a dichotomy there. So you want to save money, but you want to control weeds, and those don't always go hand in hand.
He says the fundamentals of weed control don't change and that farmers need products with multiple modes of action to control weeds. However, because of increasing resistance, Vail says there are fewer modes of action available to farmers. It's important to keep the future in mind when planning weed control programs.
Beyond that, you know, when you think about these difficult weeds, you have to be thinking about 2, 3, 4 years from now, because you'll hear people say, well, I don't have resistant weeds today. Well, you may not today, but you're going to. So one of the strategies that we use at Syngenta is that we use Halix, and we like Halix. We recommend, hey, when you're putting Halix out there, you should tank mix in atrazine or dicamba, one of those two, to give you another mode of action, because that's one of the key ways to make something like Halix more sustainable for long term. And that's really what we're trying to do with the premixes that we develop, is make something that's going to be more sustainable, that'll last more than, you know, 1 or 2 years.
Because budgets are tight, Vail said farmers are looking for the most control they can find for every dollar, and Syngenta has the answer. Halix GT corn herbicide, offering multiple modes of action to save growers time and money.
One of the things that we see this year is that a lot of folks are trying to make their own Halix GT. They're trying to mix 3 or 4 components together. And one of the things that we know from our experience is that that can be really risky, not only from a physical compatibility in the spray tank. You might plug up your sprayer, you might plug up your nozzles, but equally important is you might end up with crop injury. But with Halix GT, that product is specifically formulated to make sure that it is a safe application to the corn. So one of the key things to remember, particularly when you're comparing it to the new entrants, the generics, is that Halix GT is a proven performer. And it's performed year after year for the last 10-plus years. And we know that Halix GT controls weeds. It protects the corn, which maximizes the yield. And high-yielding corn is really what you're trying to achieve in this time when we have low commodity prices.
With one-pass convenience and control of 90 broadleaf weeds and grasses and glyphosate-tolerant corn, Halix GT has a proven legacy growers can depend on. To learn more about Halix GT and its proven legacy, visit www.halixgt-herbicide.com. Michael Clements reporting.
From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios on the road, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. That's going to do it for this report. Of course, we'll join you in studio tomorrow from Brookings, South Dakota. You're listening to Inside Agriculture. I'm Farm Director Terry Lumens.